Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Football on off the ball.
I don't see why we should start to slip now just because the league is won. Do you know, there's still two games left. You have to respect the other two teams and show them why, I suppose, maybe why we've won the league.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
I'm Colin. Hello. King Arthur, though, he was a figure from medieval literature and folklore who led the Knights of the Round Table. And though his existence as a historical person is unconfirmed by historians, no such doubts exist about the real-life King Arthur of 2025. It's the Sligonian producer extraordinaire, Mr. O'D. Good morning.
Hello. How are you?
You're well, you're flying, that you're up for the sun, I'd say.
Absolutely. Up over the top.
You love a storm. You were saying that there on LinkedIn.
No, I like the warnings. I'm always interested. We've had this discussion before.
I like talking to you.
Orange is my fears of orange more so than red.
Oh, you think red is too on the nose?
Yeah.
The storm is freaking happening in the studio. There's people collapsing above us. There's banging and there's the lights are going mental. Jojo's shaking his head exasperated. It's all gone wrong.
Yeah.
But no, stick with us. It'll be very cosy and comforting over the next 2.5 hours and exciting as well. I'll tell you one fact, Arthur, and you love a fact, right? I was looking at the CSO figures, the data from 1988.
Oh, yeah?
Right? I just put, you know, the way I usually would like. And there were only 45 babies named Keith that year in Ireland. And I were delighted to have one of the representatives of that gang this morning here, Keith Tracy. Good morning. One of 45 Keiths in Ireland in 1988.
I can't say I'm surprised. Do you watch Family Guy?
I do.
I remember Peter Griffin is trying to get into something, but the question he has to answer to get in is, what's the most unattractive male name in the English language? And Keith was the answer. I've never been a big fan of my name, to be honest.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was going to call Teddy. My wife said, do you want to call your son Keith? And I said, no, I wouldn't do that to him. Call him Teddy. So it doesn't surprise me there was only 45.
Teddy is a nice name.
I like
it's Theodore, but everybody calls him Teddy, so.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like the name Keith.
Teddy can be Edward as well, can it?
Huh?
Teddy can be Edward as well, can it?
Yeah. Teddy can be Edward.
But what, like Teddy Sheringham isn't Theodore
Sheringham. Good point. He's not Theodore. He's definitely not Theodore, is he? He's Edward. Good point. 087-9180-180. Can Teddy be Edward? Looks like he can.
Oh, my God. Theodore's great name.
Keith, yeah. But there's a
Theodore
few Keiths.
Tracy.
There's a few Keiths in Irish football from in and about your era. Like, so you have Mr. Andrews there.
Yeah.
Brentford.
Same Bertie.
Fahey.
Keith Fahey, yeah.
Long. Well, a bit older. Duffy, as boys on Reunite. Very controversial when he's playing in London, of course.
There was
an era of Keiths in roughly around the 80s, 70s, 80s where... not many were named Keith, but if you were named Keith, you did something with your life.
Yeah, the Prodigy. What was that boy's name?
Flint.
Keith Flint. Yeah.
A couple of Keiths knocking around.
Look at that. Think about that. Now. That's a good one.
Yeah.
No, I like your name.
Really?
It's cool. It's cool name. With Keith Tracy here, you've probably by now, if you're a regular viewer and listener into recent Friday episodes, you'll know it's Keith Friday. So we've loads of topics to get through with that. We actually have a bit of spillover from last week as well, right? So. Do you know that part we did about underrated players?
Yeah.
In the last week, Keith, I've a lot of people on to me to give their suggestions.
Okay.
So when we were talking about this last week on the show, it really resonated with people. I had a discussion in studio with... That noise is insane, by the way. That is absolutely mental. Can people hear that outside? It's like literally drilling right outside. Yeah. We're going to a nod there from Charlie on sound that you can. So enjoy it, because it's going to be the background track. I had a debate with Richie McCormack. Of course, you've done many a commentary with yourself. And I was asking this question. I was saying, like, we had this discussion Friday and he'd heard it. And you know what he suggested to me? Gaza. Paul Gascoigne is underrated. And I was like, come on now. Like, this is one of the most hyped up. Like, everyone's compared to this guy. Do you know what I mean? And then, in fairness to Richie, he went on a fantastic, not defence, but explanation as to why. And I really appreciate the big drive of it. And Pedri, in the game that you commented on during the week, Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, Pedri picked up the ball in the 7th minute from very deep in midfield. Sent the mid, turned around with the ball and just and ran forward about 20 or 30 yards through the middle, dribbling around players, passed it out to the left. I was like, how often do you see a central midfielder pick up the ball, facing his own goal, turning and dribbling? Which I think is one of the hardest skills you can do in football. And Richie's argument was Paul Gascoigne was doing this all the time in his pamp with Newcastle, Spurs, and to an extent at times with Lazio. And Rangers was a joke. The Scottish Premiership was an absolute joke to him. It was, and even then, like, you know, there was some big names playing in Scotland, and it was still fairly handy for him. And then after that, massively petered out. But it was an interesting.
I don't think you can call him underrated, though. No. Like, some people I talked to were saying, Gaz is the best player he's ever seen, the best player in the world. And he wasn't at the top for long enough.
If anyone with, like, half a bit of talent comes through from England now, and they're in and around midfielder up front, they're like, well, it's the next Gazza.
And but I think if you have a bit of a personality outside
it definitely
of
helps, the football, it definitely helps your brand.
Oh, here's a Gazza going, like a Grealish.
We were talking about it yesterday, the 1982 Aston Villa won the European Cup. It's never talked about. Because there's no one key figure from that era that's around to this day talking about it massively, like the way that Nottingham Forest had loads of people. But it was just an interesting argument that Gazza did a thing that central midfielders don't do, which is dribble with the ball through the middle. And I appreciate that.
It has been 35 unbroken years of people saying you've no idea how good this guy was, though.
Oh yeah. Now I do get the odd person who goes the other way who was there at the time, says he was over it, that he was a moments player.
Probably,
if you crystallise it, he had two major tournaments. That wasn't all his fault, because England, he was injured for Euro 92 and he didn't qualify for USA 94. It's not entirely his fault.
I think it's sometimes hard to know with the British media, because if you're English or all British, they throw so much weight behind you that it's hard to know how much of it is actually real and how much of it is just, you know, the media hyping him up. But Gazza, for me, I don't think he was underrated. I think he was a very, very good player. But yeah, he just wasn't at the top for long enough for me to, you know, be viewed as one of the best players in the world.
Maverick, though.
Yeah. Oh, he's a maverick. But like, when you talk about people running through the middle of the park, what about Nuno Mendes from left back at PSG? Just
Keith
driving through the middle.
We had Philippe Auclair on the show yesterday, John, the French.
Yeah.
And like, when's the only time that you and I or anyone in this in these seats would ask about a left back first? But that was the first thing I just felt compelled to. It was like, this guy just running through the middle like Gazza. That's insane. Left back.
To be fair, I was looking at him in early stages up against Lamine Yamal. He was giving Yamal like 4 or 5 yards. He didn't want to get too tight. He wasn't being too aggressive. And I was thinking, can't do this for too much longer, because the balls he was playing in behind for runners. But then he just thought, well, I'm going to start running the other way and let's see what Lamine Yamal does then. And I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I think he's the best left back in the world, bar none. And, you know, people have made the argument Trent has gone to Real Madrid to try and win the Ballon d'Or. I think if a fullback wins it, I still think Hakimi's ahead of him. I still think Nuno Mendes is ahead of Trent.
It's a good shout, yeah.
I think they have the best two fullbacks in the world.
Well, like, what do you have to do as a fullback to win the Ballon d'Or? I was looking at this when Dembele won it last week, because, you know, they give the top three. As Roberto Carlos got it 1 year, he came second. I think it was when Brazil won the World Cup, 2002. Yeah. And Constructors Real Madrid won the Champions League as well. And I was like, well, what do you have to do as a fullback? Like, how would you do that? Like, and I'd say Nuno Mendes is the closest answer you'll get to it, where there's a guy who just picked the ball up from deep and just run half the pitch and assist. And like you say, Hakimi is capable of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's just class having a position like that, because you mentioned in commentary during the week, and you were saying, God, fullbacks have changed since my day.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, it's so true. Like, you know, fullback, but back then you would stay in your position. Gary Neville talks about it now regularly. It was like the idea of marauding up the wing. And Gary Neville would bomb on past David Beckham, but primarily he was there to defend first. It's a different world now with these fullbacks.
Can you imagine the when you get told you're up against Lamine Yamal today, get on your bike every opportunity you get an overlap?
Oh,
that wouldn't be getting said to left backs back in the day. Stay where you are.
Yeah, I love that moment when Yamal tried to take him on the outside, Mendes, and he took it off him just.
He looked like he was passing, didn't he? And a go-go gadget leg.
How often do you see 1v1 battle these days with two world-class players? You know, it's a rarity, so it's a treat.
Thing,
like.
And people seem to highlight it all the time when it was Jack Grealish at Manchester City. The amount of time that wingers get the ball on the 1v1 and you think, I'll just go
so
back.
Frustrating. It's so frustrating.
That's success for a winger. You're 1v1, go and skin him.
Yeah. Like but your stats then would be terrible because you're going to lose the ball.
Manager wants possession and recycle it. I get it, that's one of the things that really annoys me about football is the amount of weight people put behind possession stats.
All right, we have loads of other shouts there for underrated players. The other things we want to get on today with Keith Friday is best stadiums, which is a request last week from Roy Larmer, and best matches, like matches that you most fondly remember watching. So again, get involved here on YouTube by all means. You could have been at the game, or you could just watch the game on TV, games that mean something to you. And then one that I have to give credit for, the aforementioned Gary Neville, it was a great question during the week, was the goal in football that you wish you would have scored yourself. So it could be a great goal or a really important goal. Keith's already given us a couple of shouts there in the pre-show meeting. So hit us up with all of that. But we should get onto the business of actually what happened last night. So I mentioned at the very top there, a historical night for Irish football with two Irish teams in European proper competition for the first time ever. So in Czechia, they like to be called now, it finished Sparta Praha 4, Shamrock Rovers 1. So I went all in on this game, Keith. I watched the first half of this and Rovers were doing all right up until that 33rd minute goal. For people who've missed this game last night, didn't see the highlights, the first two Sparta Prague goals, the second of which was scored just before half time, so avoidable from a Shamrock Rovers perspective. There was a first goal was basically a collision between two hugely important players for Rovers in Pico Lopez and Josh Honohan, and then it was, forgive me now, I'm after forgetting the name of the midfielder who was on the line, who should have cleared the ball, but basically he cleared it against the striker from Sparta Prague, so it hit off him and went in. And the second goal in McGinty was very poor for in the Shamrock Rovers goal, just parried it right back out and a simple tapping. So you're not helping yourself, which was frustrating because up to that point Rovers did all right. They got a great goal in the second half. Danny Mandre, who didn't start the game, along with Dylan Watts, and probably less surprisingly so Graham Burke. But Mandreo's goal, beautiful swiveling finish. But Sparta Prague scored two more goals in the second half. So it's a chastening night. But look, the goal difference is -3. If that will help at all when it comes to it at the end.
I don't think so. I think if Shamrock Rovers to get a point against Sparta Prague last night, you'd have been over the moon.
Yeah.
They very rarely lose Prague. And when they play in Prague, doubly so, they don't lose an awful lot of games. The last time they lost a home game was back at the start of May. Prague, and look, you look through their team, they've got Kosovo internationals, Serbian, Ecuador, Czech Republic, Finnish internationals. They're really, really good at this level. It's a melting pot. To try and play football in Prague is a tough thing to do. And look, I what would have been worrying for me is if Shamrock Rovers turned up and met their levels and still got hammered 4-1. That wasn't the case. They didn't really turn up. They made mistake after mistake in the back line, and they got rightfully beaten. But I'm sure Stephen Bradley be thinking, not every team we're going to play is Sparta Prague. There is other teams that they'd be thinking, the likes of, like Breda Blick maybe hammering at the end, but they need points on the board before they get into the last two games. So it's difficult. Even AEK Athens, you're looking at them thinking, is there something there? But the Greek teams are becoming better and better every year in European
Shakhtar
competitions.
Shakhtar Donetsk are coming to town as well, aren't Shakhtar they? Always worried about them.
Shakhtar, but Ukrainian sides as well, Celjay. There's some difficult games in there. Like I say, I think they will look at the Breda Blick game, the hammering game, the Malta team, and I think they'll get some points on the board, but there's no need to panic from a Shamrock Rovers point of view.
You mentioned AEK Athens there. I was thinking Anthony Martial plays for them.
Yeah.
Well, he did.
He's gone?
He's gone.
Where's he now?
Monterrey in Mexico.
Oh.
That went completely under the radar, didn't it?
Monterrey?
Yeah. Is there a part of me that, but is this a flawed logic or naivety even, that I was expecting a Stephen Bradley Shamrock Rovers side to really compete in this game and get something? As in, that's a massive compliment to what they've achieved in the last couple of years, even though it is, like you've just justified there, an incredibly difficult place to go.
No, I was the same, and I think Shamrock Rovers have earned the right. You know, a lot of people, and I started digging into the stats, and I thought Sparta Prague should have enough to beat Shamrock Rovers, but then the thought jumped into my head straight away and said, don't be disrespectful to Shamrock Rovers. Yeah. They've earned the right to be, you know, not to be dismissed in this game. It turned out that way that it was an easy enough game for Sparta Prague, but as I say, I still think Shamrock Rovers would be sitting in the background thinking, we get 6 or 7 points in this group, we can get out of this. And look, Shelbourne would be thinking the same, done really well, got a point last night. But in terms of Shamrock Rovers, they got some winnable games coming up, and in Tallaght, a lot of teams look at Shamrock Rovers and thinking they're the real deal in Europe from an Irish point of view. So they've scored 53 goals this season in the league. It's out of possession I worry about Shamrock Rovers, but like I say, not every team they play is going to be a Sparta Prague.
It was Matt Heaney who I was thinking of.
Yeah. Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
You mentioned Tala there. There was a team playing in Tala last night, not Shamrock Rovers, but you were watching Shells against BK Häcken from Sweden. Finished scoreless for people who missed out in that game. And really not an awful lot to report from the match itself. So Meepo had the ball in the net early on, but it was ruled out for a marginal offside. They definitely dominated possession, Häcken. I think it was 65-35 on average was their superior possession. It was a decent performance from Shells, first time in a European competition proper. And Joey O'Brien, will have a couple of clips here from Joey O'Brien in just a moment, but it was a decent first outing.
Yeah, exactly what you would want from Shelbourne. Sometimes never really felt during the game that Shelbourne were going to be capable of winning it. But, you know, when you're playing in those games, you feel you can't win it. But the one thing you need to do is make sure you don't lose. And Häcken, although they were the better team, boss possession, had more shots on goal, looked the more threatening, I think Shelbourne were fairly comfortable out of possession as well. I don't think Vestal Spiel had too many saves to make in the Shelbourne goal. And I think Vinnie Peart said it really well last night. I was jumping in and out of commentary while I was watching it at home. And $133,000 for the draw last night. Yeah. It's more for that than winning the league. That's crazy, isn't it?
That's mad, yeah. That's a great point to make, actually, because we highlighted that yesterday. It's $400,000 for a win, like you say, you get for a draw.
123,000 for a draw. It's unbelievable, isn't it? And a lot of people are saying to me, you know, what do Shelbourne do here? Because they're still in the European race in terms of the league. You know, if they go and draw another three games, it's monumental money for them already. Yeah. I know they've secured just over the €3 million for getting into the league phase. A couple of draws in this or even a win, you're talking mega money. So I'm not too sure. I just hope it doesn't hurt Shelbourne domestically, because I'd like to see them do Europe again this year.
Yeah. Well, Joey O'Brien was speaking afterwards last night as Shelbourne manager, and he was kind of touching what you were saying there, Keith, about, you know, it's great that they're in the European proper competition, but like, don't stop at that and have a bit more ambition. And like you say, they got a big reward for the draw last night. And here is Joey O'Brien talking.
The last message, I think we've seen it. Tweet, it could have been Dave Henderson, maybe, I think, said something about that he was in 6 years ago selling Christmas trees in Talca Park with Dave O'Connor, the new CEO. And I mean, I just wanted to touch on that with the lads to say how far you come, but don't accept it. This club over the last couple of years for us shouldn't have got probably the success that we've had, and it was all because we kept on pushing, driven all the time to keep on achieving, keep on reaching higher. And that was the thing tonight. Don't be happy where we are, don't be contented by getting group stage football and thinking, oh geez, job done, it's nice, you know, we can go out and enjoy ourselves. I said that to the lads, it's about winning, it's about qualifying, and ultimately don't do that, we're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, pretty strong words there from Joey O'Brien. So we'll have more on Shamrock Rovers and Shelbourne from last night, and the FAI Cup semi-final tonight, and the Republic of Ireland squad. Loads to talk about with Barry Murphy and Owen Heary after the first ad break, but in the meantime, loads more to get through from last night. I'll just have a brief digression here. I got a text from an anonymous. I have never met a bad looking Keith.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think it's one of those names when you hear Keith. I don't think you envisage a good looking person straight away.
Listen, the person who texted me that, you know, great taste. So huge.
Is it from a Keith?
The wife, was it?
The wife, yeah. The wife texted me there. No, it's from someone that we all have huge time for and respect for and off the ball. So so you can sit in that. What else do we have from last night? So if you were all in on the Irish teams last night, which is understandable, you might have missed a fair bit of drama, right? So Roma played last night, Keith, right, at home to Lille. Evan Ferguson started. Olivier Giroud started for Lille. We mentioned him this time last week, but the big drama from this game, Lille went away with a 1-0 win. Roma were awarded a penalty, which was taken 3 times because of encroachment twice. All 3 penalties were missed. And Dobrik, our arch nemesis there of Evan Ferguson, who came on Ferguson, took those first 2 penalties and missed them. So, hey, this is great for Ferguson.
To be fair, you never want to say these things out loud, but I'm sure Evan Ferguson, when Dovbeck missed the two penalties, was thinking, lovely.
That's
lovely.
True, isn't it?
It is true. You don't want to hear it, but you're in direct competition with these people. And Evan done okay last night. He held the ball up at times, but in terms of being a real goal threat, we haven't really seen that in a Roma jersey. But he's 20 years of age playing in a Roma team. You know what I mean? Such a high level. People think, oh, we need Evan to be what we need him to be in terms of an Ireland striker, but he's so ahead of the curve to be doing what he's doing at this age, to be playing ahead of Ukrainian international Dovbeck. He's on a brilliant trajectory. We just I can feel the Irish people just pushing him down the road as quickly as we can, but we need to take our time with him. I mean, Troy Parrott's doing so well. I'm not sure he'll make the Irish team. I know he's still struggling with injury, but we can't push these lads further down or quicker down the road because we need our own selfish needs.
You hear the term a player's player. So if Ferguson's doing the job as a centre forward and bringing others into the game and holding it up well but not scoring, that type of thing that's appreciated by his teammates but won't set the world alight.
Yeah, the wingers, the inverted wingers, Pellegrini in particular, will be over the moon because when the ball goes into him, he can come in off the wing and get involved. But I said this when the move first happened with Evan. Evan's a brilliant player. He has an awful lot to him. But you can't be a number nine for Roma and not score goals. He has to score goals. Otherwise, he won't be in the team. And, you know, you can play really, really well, but you can probably only get a 7 out of 10 without hitting the back of the net as a striker. So he does need to start hitting the back of the net, and if he does that, it's going to look well for Ireland moving forward.
Bad night for the Scottish Premiership contingent in Europe. So the Russell Martin era, I mean, it continues at Rangers, but they lost again, and once again, he was very critical of his players afterwards. There's a mentality issue here. This guy has no shame, Arthur.
No, he does, doesn't he?
No shame. He's wearing his failure with pride and his impending exit with a bit of confidence.
But it's the same.
Is it a lesson?
It was the same thing at Southampton, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was.
Just doggedly saying, well, I'm not the problem. I mean, it's starting to look like you might be a problem. it's shocking. Like.
But do you think that self-confidence, presumably born out of self-preservation, got him the Rangers job? When it was going so badly at Southampton, he was coming out weirdly confident about, well, you know, it's not really working, but this is the way I want to play football. So we had what you'd call an identity these days in football, and it's got him another job. Is that what Ruben Amorim is thinking?
It's so backwards, isn't it, football at the minute? Like it doesn't.
Do you think so?
Yeah, it's almost.
That's a big
results
call.
Are backwards. I mean, look at Vincent Kompany gets relegated with Burnley, gets the Bayern Munich job.
Yeah.
Russell Martin does so poorly with Southampton. Yeah, he's nailed his colours to the mast in terms of how he's going to play. Southampton never have a hope of staying in the Premier League. Yet he picks up the Rangers job.
Yeah.
It's so strange. It's like if you have an identity and a way of playing, it comes before results. And I always think results are the most important thing. And it's the most basic thing to say. People have been saying, of course, results are the most important thing. It doesn't seem like that half the time with the managerial appointments. And even you look at Ange Postecoglou getting the Forest job.
Oh, man.
Nothing within the Premier League campaign suggests he should have got the Forest job. I know he won a European Cup, and that's probably why Marinakis has said, oh, we'll get him into the building. But I even think that's a bit of a dodgy appointment, to be fair. And they're already calling for his head after last night.
Well, you mentioned him there, so he has an unfortunate stat associated with his name now. Ange Postecoglou is the first permanent Nottingham Forest manager for 100 years to fail to win any of his first 6 games in charge. 2 draws and 4 defeats, the latest of which was last night, as you say, Keith, against Michelin, who I think Manchester United supporters remember from a few years ago.
They will.
They went to the City Ground and won 3-2, and they're actually 3-1 up.
That's where Rashford managed to be, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right there. I heard you say it, Arthur, in pre-show. I think I heard Phil say it outside. It was like, I should have taken the year off. And he said he received a call when he was on the school run. Maybe he just wanted
out. Probably what tipped him over the edge.
He was like, I'll take it.
Can you remember a manager in recent history that fans have been calling for their head and results haven't been going well and it gets a little bit toxic? Like Russell Martin at Rangers, maybe like Ange is starting to go like that. Can you remember a manager in recent time turning it around after it's got to that point? I know people always say, oh, Alex Ferguson at Manchester. Yeah. You know, I'm talking about recent history.
I feel like there's.
I do feel like there's something. There's someone who's prominent. What are you talking now? Are you talking the pressure that Ange is currently under or was under at Spurs? What's your level here?
Somebody's name who's been trying to out, he could get the ball at any minute and he's turned it back around.
There's definitely someone I'm thinking of.
I feel like Moyes might have done it once or at maybe at West Ham the first time, did he?
What, he got let go, didn't he?
The first time. Yeah, see, I
got let go both times.
I think it's just a sign of the times, isn't it?
Yeah, no, you're right. But there, there's definitely something.
There's someone that's.
Well, I know really lingering there.
This is not the answer, but I know that Diego Simeone had a tough time at Atletico around the last World Cup because we spoke with Graham Hunter about this. So like the end of 2022 when that Winter World Cup was on, and there was a feeling among the powers that be at Atletico that he had taken the foot off the gas, and but he ended up signing a new contract, and he's done obviously very well since.
Arteta went through an incredibly bad spell.
I think Arteta's still on trial.
They went through like 10 games or something before. I think they won one at Old Trafford.
It's a really good question. Can anyone think of it out there that we're missing? Because I feel like there's a really good example that we're missing of a manager who's under massive pressure for his job but turns it around.
But what I'm trying to get is with Amorim under pressure and starting to come under pressure, Russell Martin starting to come under pressure, Graham Potter's obviously just gone from West Ham as well. Very, very rarely do managers turn it around in these situations. So what's the point in hanging on and think, oh, we'll give him another week. Oh, that was a draw. We'll give him another week.
Yeah.
Just do it. Like, I think West Ham, although you never like to see anybody lose their job, I think they've looked down the road and thought, Graham Potter, West Ham, this has relegation written all over it. Let's just do it now.
Did Brendan Rodgers start badly at Liverpool and then turn it around in the season that they nearly won the league? Is my memory correct there? Did Rodgers, without looking at this, did Rodgers get appointed in 2012? Liverpool, and there's that documentary about him, so they immediately started following him around.
Yeah.
And it was the end of 2013-14 that they should have won the league.
Yeah.
My memory is that he didn't have a great first season.
It can't have been that bad, though.
No, it wouldn't have been, because. And obviously, like,
Hodgson and Dalglish, Park 2.
Huh?
They were coming off, obviously, Hodgson into Dalglish.
Yeah, part time. I remember 11, that.
12, and that Hodgson was a disaster. So, like.
Oh, jeez. Poor Roy. Hodgson had the great escape at Fulham, but he wasn't under pressure. When Fulham were 2-0 down away to Man City at half time, and they won 3-2. But based on what he did with them and got them to the Europa League final, he got the Liverpool jobs. It's interesting one. Let us know.
And then the England job.
And then the England job, isn't right?
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
So it's halfway through the old firm shenanigans there in Europe last night. Celtic 0 Braga 2, a desperate result for Brendan Rodgers. But probably the biggest talking point from this, did you see this what happened here? Kelechi Iheanacho.
Yeah.
Good God. So first of all, the first talking point here, Ricardo Horta, Braga's first goal scorer last night, took a shot from about 30 yards out, dipping. Did you see this?
That's
dipping
grateful.
One. But Kasper Schmeichel, Jesus. What's he doing?
All over the place.
He's about 5 minutes to see the shot coming, but you don't save it. That's 0-1, and then Kelechi Iheanacho, lovely finish, goes through in between two defenders, ball bounces off him, composed enough, finishes left foot, ruled out for a handball. I can't see any hand.
Did you know that really frustrates me? I was doing Liverpool and Crystal Palace a week or so ago, and there was a ball crossed in, and Salah throws his hand up in the air, and the ball sort of flicks off Salah's fingers. It doesn't, you know, move the ball in a huge way, but it just flicks off his fingers, and the covering defender can't quite head it, and Chiesa puts it into the back of the net. And that, for me, although it's not a massive handball, it's still handball. You've put the Crystal Palace defender off. And they're looking at the Iheanacho one, and I think the explanation from VAR was, I can see no reason to not give that goal. With the Iheanacho one, or the Celtic one last night, you're looking and thinking, where's the handball? Show me the handball.
I mean, we got to ask John Masters, don't we?
Even VAR, like, whatever about the ref looking at it in real time and think that might be handball. For the lads in VAR to be having a look at that and thinking, yeah, that's handball. Because I've been looking at it all morning, and I can't get my head around what they've seen to think, that's not a goal. I mean, you have to be 100% thinking he's handballed that.
Yeah.
And the fact that three or four sets of eyes have had a look at that and thought, yep, it's really, really poor. Shocking decision. And look, Brendan Rodgers said after that was at a pivotal moment in the game. If that goal is allowed in around the 50th minute, Celtic with the fans pushing, you think maybe they can turn that into 3 points. So awful, awful decision. VAR was brought in to eradicate those types of silly decisions, and 4-5 sets of eyes have had a look at it and all gone the wrong way.
Yeah, I finally kind of lost my rag with VAR in the Brentford game last weekend. Just how long everything took.
Yep.
But Adrian Barry actually was at that game, our own friend Adrian, and he said that the Brentford fans did celebrate Igor Thiago's opener. They did, like, yeah. So
I don't think you're wrong on that one. I think they celebrate twice if it happens.
No, I just don't. I never feel like
And I'm not in the kind of way. Have you been to a game where there's been VAR?
Yeah.
And how did you find it?
Annoying.
I don't mind it.
Yeah.
Because I was at the Everton United game last season, and there was definitely something about. So it was a free kick from Fernandes. So it must have been the Ugarte goal or something. But you just go mad twice.
I just think you lose the adrenaline. That's my experience of it. You celebrate, but you know the way, like, you know the way, like, it's like a party that you've organised for a long time, and you're at the party, and you're like, I should be having a good time here. No, I'm going to force this.
I think you're forcing this opinion.
I'm not forcing this opinion. This is what's in me. I'm explaining it. Yeah, I'm telling you how I feel.
But I don't think it's. I don't think it's a widespread problem.
I think
generally the evidence would suggest that people are just, because it's the exact same thing as if an offside flag went up and you didn't see it.
Oh, so see, the one thing I don't like about it, it's black and white. If you're offside, you're offside. But when it's such a tight decision and you go through, the attacking team goes through and scores, and they think they score, they celebrate. Then the VAR comes in and goes, oh, you're actually just a little bit offside. All of a sudden, you've been punished, or it feels like a punishment, and there's a huge momentum shift. You've just scored. Now it's been chalked off, and the opposition all of a sudden have their tails up, and they think, brilliant, we've just been vitalising. We've been attacking the whole game, and we've just gone through and been offside, and all of a sudden, the crowd are up, and the opposition have a little bit of advantage. That's the one thing I don't like about it, but it is what it is.
No, I hate that phrase so much.
What?
It is what it is. It suggests that you can't do anything about anything. But you can fix it. You can. Right?
But it's not VAR. It's the people using VAR.
I know. So but that's exactly why we have the boy Massey back on.
Ask him more questions.
The use of it in the game that you commented on during the week was excellent.
Yeah.
Barcelona PSG. So Ferran Torres is marginal. Just like Igor Thiago was.
Sharp as well, wasn't it?
No problem
there.
But
the time they finished celebrating, the goal was given.
Brilliant, yeah. But, there's a part to me that, and this is the nature of VAR, that there will be a doubt, is I find myself, and maybe this is just me, and that's fine, that I slightly hold myself back in celebration with the anticipation that it's going to be ruled out.
Yeah.
And it's for, I'd say, about 85% of the goals scored in football. Well, I don't really know if it's going to count. And maybe you can enjoy that instant anyway and have fun with yourself.
Yeah.
But I just there's just that element of, you know, football's instinctive and it's a celebration and it's ultimately an escape. Everything we talk about here is escapism. And if that's making a little bit corporate and business-like, the other side of the world that we have to live, I don't want those two to meet.
How is it corporatized? Is it just getting the right results? Like,
I think it's...
Because more often than not, it's a success.
It's kind of... you know, it feels like VAR is entering the world of KPIs.
Why?
You know, I just feel it's very official. And I think football is really instinctive. And I think if you're honing in on detail to prevent the main goal, don't pardon the pun, of the sport, then you've lost sight of what it's for. Even though the idea of it was totally fine in that this is going to prevent any terrible mistakes. So it's like, this is all comes from the Roy Carroll dropping the ball into the goal or horrendous offsides that weren't given and all that.
Henry, of course,
Thierry Henry. But for things like that, they'd be more really egregious errors, I guess, you know. And for a lot of the time, it's people who are like just offside, you know, because they have a limb over the line.
Like offside and is offside.
I don't think personally you have... a huge advantage if my kneecap is 2 inches ahead of yours.
So is your issue then not with the offside rule? Because VAR is just doing what
My issue is, it's a combination of the offside rule matched with VAR, which inevitably leads to 3.5 to 4 minute decisions about, well, I don't know. I mean, was he ahead? Did he have an unfair advantage? I mean, that's a good point. It's a good question, actually, because John Bass makes the point that he had a former manager who was very critical of VAR and he had a go off it and he took 13 minutes to make a decision of one offside. It was like, well, did he really get an advantage and all that? I'm making a point about something that's not going to change. So it's more of a lament. They're not going to go back. Like, this is like the internet, isn't it? They're not going to go back from there.
Arsene Wenger's suggestion on the offside rail.
A clear body.
Daylight. So it favours the attackers.
Yeah,
not,
like, you're going to have every defender in the world come out against that. Like, it's a fast game by nature, and I think it's been unnecessarily slowed down with things like this. And I was kind of patient with VAR for a long time, and for whatever reason, that game last week just really annoyed me.
You know, how long everything was taken. Bounced around my head as we're talking around this. Do you think VAR's disturbed defending? Because I think defending now is a second thought. Like, everybody just runs up to the halfway line and think, let's hope we catch these offside. And if we don't, we'll all just sprint back like lunatics. Rather than keeping the game in front of you and actually defending and putting tackles in and moving your feet, run up, condense the pitch. When they pump it in behind, we'll all sprint back like lunatics. It's not real defending, is it?
Why do you think it's disturbed defending?
Because you don't see people like in 1v1 battles anymore. It's all like, we'll go and stand on the halfway line, we'll condense the pitch, it's bop, 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 and in behind.
Is that not a system thing rather than VAR?
Yeah, but I think that's because of VAR. Because people are saying we'll push right high up the pitch because offside will be given as offside. They'll have a look at it through VAR. Whereas if VAR wasn't there, people would say we can't rely on the offside, so we'll drop back a little bit and we'll defend, as I would call it, properly.
Yeah, maybe. I haven't thought about that.
But I think that's the reason high lines have come into the game so much, like, is because they'll have a look if he's offside and we'll try our best. But I honestly, like, Harry Maguire, the goal against Brentford, rather than running in with Thiago, he decides, I'll try and play offside.
Yeah.
And he runs up to the halfway line and then sprints back in. That's him trying to use VAR to his advantage rather than defending first.
Yeah. I suppose to use that game as an example, and look, maybe that was even an old money that would have been marginal and would have been discussed. But Jensen's third goal in that game for Brentford, it looked like a perfectly fine goal. It was like a breakaway and he takes a shot. And I was thinking, when it went in, I was like, oh, they're going to look at that. Yeah. That was my instinct reaction. They're going to have a look at that. And I was, why are they going to look at it? But they will, like, they will look at that to see if, and I don't know if that's the mentality where we're like trying to, you know, the outcome is a prevention of goals a lot of the time. And like, I've no problem with people thinking the opposite, that, like, well, sure, that's what it's there for. That's the whole point. It's supposed to improve football. I would say it's improved it at what cost?
Yeah.
And it's, for me, it's my enjoyment of the game. That's it, really.
I do. I'd love to probe. I know we're kind of tight in time. I'd still like to probe around on that.
Oh, yeah, we could do that. Yeah,
I do wonder if my night were doing better.
Oh, no. That's an outrageous accusation.
You're talking about goals, you'd be celebrating.
That's an outrageous accusation. Well, actually, I saw the same with Šeško's goal. I was like, this would be ruled out.
Yeah.
Kelleher's probably been fouled there. They'll have deemed to have fouled him. No, it's absolutely nothing to do with partisanship. And I'm grossly offended by such an accusation.
But you literally said that it's about the celebration of goals.
Yeah, but that's celebration of goals anywhere. No, like Igor Thiago's goal.
You weren't celebrating
and Jensen's
that.
Goal. No, I think it would have been great if I had the feeling that everyone's able to freely celebrate these goals without them. All they might be looked at now. And
but Adrian said the fans went mad twice.
It was his. Yeah, it was his.
He was there.
Yeah, that was his. That was sure. I brought it up.
But my point is,
I brought that up.
So there, but so
no, that was Adrian went mad.
Yeah,
I'm not. He's not speaking on behalf of everyone from Brentford.
Well, yeah,
you know, Adrian was fine with it, and that's fine. This is why this debate. For VAR and all that can eventually become insufferable, because you're going to have two different camps who are never going to relent in what they think. You're a man of science, I'm a man of feeling, and here we are.
Can I just get something off my chest?
I was reading
the papers outside, and Ruben Amorim of Manchester United had a family day after he got beat.
I'm not happy with this, lad. You should have heard him at 7:27. Whoa.
I can't get my head around it. I played in England for, you know, 12, 13 years, and never once did we have a family day at the training ground. And I've been teams
for better or for worse.
For better or for worse. When we were as low as a snake's belly, when we were getting promoted, never once did they say, Keith, get the wife and the family and get into the training ground.
Keith, get the wife and the family.
It's a place
friend
of
with
work.
The guitar. Get and the wife and family.
When you, look, if you've won the Champions League and you've gone and done, you've won the Premier League and you've been brilliant all season.
Yeah.
Have a little reward. Bring the family in. Have a barbecue. Everybody get close. But when things are in dire straits and you just can't win, get the family. Let's have a family day.
But they're desperate, obviously, aren't they? Because obviously they're at a low ebb.
Yeah, but
the camaraderie is bust.
You come in there to work and to graft. You don't come in to have, like, hold hands with your kids and let them run around the pitch. That's not stuff that happens in the training ground. And like I say, when you're not playing well and you're down the bottom end of the Premier League, it's so, so poor, and you think, tell you what, let's have a family day. It's just, I don't understand it. It's just, it's nice, isn't it? Happy sunshine, bust, like. Where's the criticism? Where's the digging people out? Just lost to Brentford, by the way.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't... You'd have obviously way more
imagine
experience.
How flat that would be.
I do imagine at this stage they're just trying to do anything. Because I can't... I suspect all the criticism has been it's been thrown at them again and again.
I get it. When we lost to Wigan,
Paul Jewell.
Paul Ince. It might have been Paul Jewell's Wigan team, but yeah. Paul Ince was the manager. And he was after giving us a couple of earfuls. He was after running us during the week when we lost. And he looked up and just said, lads, don't get pissed. And we went to Dublin on a Christmas deal.
And that worked, did it?
Well, he got sacked as we were flying to Dublin, so it didn't work out too well for him. But we avoided relegation when Sam came in.
So, Keith hates families. All right, loads of hot
Keith
takes
hates
here.
Family. I like my family.
Yeah, they're great. Crystal Palace, lads, how about this, right? 19 games unbeaten. That's the best record in the top five European leagues. Mm. They went to Ukraine last night, won 2-0. Against Dynamo Kiev. Unbelievable stuff that Oliver Glasner's doing there. And finally, Aston Villa won again. Where's Ger Gilroy when you need him? Villa flying a 3-3.
Hey, football fans. Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.